Welcome, radio readers. This is Radio Reader Garth, and yes, that's Garth as in Garth Brooks. Today I'll be bringing you news and headlines from the April 25th, 2018 edition of the News Gazette. Our first headline is Legal Scholar: Collusion, Not Crime. One-on-one with Alan Dershowitz. The Dem opposed to use a special counsel to speak Thursday at the University of Illinois, by Julie Wirth. Legal commentator Alan Dershowitz, whose opposition to special prosecutors has won favor with Donald Trump, thinks it's unlikely the president will fire Deputy Attorney Rod Rosenstein or Special Counsel Robert Mueller, despite his Twitter attacks. It would be so foolish at this point politically to fire anybody that I don't think it's going to happen, the retired Harvard law professor said Tuesday. Dershowitz, who will appear Thursday at the University of Illinois, is a lifelong Democrat and civil liberties advocate, but has criticized Mueller's inquiry into possible collusion by the Trump campaign with Russians meddling in the 2016 presidential election. Dershowitz says he isn't defending Trump, but thinks special prosecutors are dangerous to democratic values. He has criticized the use of criminal investigations as political weapons, including the investigation of Hillary Clinton's private mail server. "It's a problem I've had for years. I wrote a whole book about it when Bill Clinton was subject to the special prosecutor law. I have said nothing different now. It's just that people don't like it when I say it helps Donald Trump," he said. "I think we should figure out a system to eliminate the need for a special counsel," he said. "Their goal is to get somebody or a group that has a target on its back. If you don't get them, then you failed in your job." Dershowitz put most of the blame for Trump's predicament on the president's firing of former FBI Director James Comey. "That was a terrible mistake. He shouldn't have done it. He had the right to do it, but it was a terrible decision," Dershowitz said. "If Trump planned to fire Comey, he should have done it on day one rather than later, which raised the specter that Comey was fired because of the Russian investigation," he said. But he said the investigation should have been given to career civil servants to prosecute. Trump, however, has publicly attacked his own Justice Department and the FBI for being partisan, and Mueller's supporters have said it's vital to have an independent inquiry. "Defendants always attack prosecutors. I've attacked prosecutors," Dershowitz replied. "It's part of the adversarial system." He also said that that's simply Trump's style, not that he necessarily approves. Dershowitz said he'd given Trump four pieces of advice: don't fire, don't pardon, don't tweet, and don't testify. He believes the federal inquiry will end with a report by Mueller to Congress, most likely focusing on players in the Trump campaign. "It will probably cast some moral responsibility on the president. I don't think it's going to result in any legal charges against Trump," he said. Criticism of Cohen raid. Dershowitz has argued that there is no federal statute against collusion and doesn't believe it's a crime, though other lawyers say it would violate campaign finance laws. "At the moment, I haven't seen any evidence of any criminal activity or an impeachable offense. That doesn't mean I'm going to vote for him," said Dershowitz, who voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016. "What happens after Mueller's report will depend on the results of the November midterm elections," he said. "If they produce an overwhelming victory by the Democrats, the Democrats may foolishly try to impeach him the way the Republicans impeached Clinton. And it will probably end up backfiring on them the way it backfired on the Republicans. In the end, it failed," he said. Dershowitz said the bigger danger for Trump lies in the investigation by the U.S. Attorney's Office on his business dealings and relationships with women before he became president. He doesn't have any constitutional defense for what he did before he became president, Dershowitz said. He criticized investigators for the way they handled the raid of Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen, subpoenaing email records without any opportunity for challenge by Cohen, and trying to create an FBI taint team to remove any records covered by attorney-client privilege before turning them over to investigators. That doesn't protect the privilege, he said. A judge or judicial officer should be doing the review. U.S. District Court Judge Kimba Wood, one of Dershowitz's former students, signaled that she may appoint an outside attorney for that review, but has yet to make a final decision. I think they ought to reserve searching lawyers' offices to the most serious crimes, not for technical violations of the law, Dershowitz said. The reason they raided his office was, one, to get him to flip against President Trump if he has anything to flip about, and second, to see if they could find material on President Trump. He's a means toward an end. Tweets mean trouble. Dershowitz admitted he's uncomfortable that Trump uses his arguments to bolster his charge that the inquiry is a witch hunt. He disagrees with the president on many fronts. He's against the travel ban, the death penalty, and some of Trump's racially charged language, including a recent reference to immigrant breeding, reminiscent of Nazi propaganda about Jews during the Holocaust. Those statements have the effect of at least encouraging racial expression in this country. I think he ought to be more careful about the language he uses as president, Dershowitz said. I think he'd be better off if he didn't tweet. He's going to say, "That's how I got elected president. You're not the president. Don't tell me what to do." That's the attitude, said Dershowitz, who dined with Trump at the White House 2 weeks ago. On Thursday, Dershowitz is scheduled to discuss the topic of free speech in turbulent times, but will likely address a range of issues, including the Israeli-Palestine conflict and the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. He will also meet with business and law students, faculty, and alumni during a two-day visit to Urbana in Chicago. Dershowitz, a strong supporter of Israel, has clashed with administrators at the University of Berkeley, California, and elsewhere over restrictions on outside speaking. He said universities are no longer teaching students the value of free speech. I'm a liberal Democrat, but I have views somewhat different from the radical left, and the radical left is determined to try to shut me down, he said. I'm a much worse enemy to the radical left than the right-wing conservatives. They can laugh at them. They're extreme. I present an alternative liberal model that will attract lots of students away from the radicals. Champaign County Board, nursing home contract extended. Reversal of last week's vote was unanimous. By Tom Kasich, Urbana. It took only 9 minutes for Champaign County board members to undo what they did last Thursday. Board members voted unanimously Tuesday night to extend the county nursing home management with contract with SAC Management Services until July 31. They reversed a vote last week when the board's 10 Republican members, upset with SAC's performance, voted down an automatic renewal of the contract. But there was no reference to that blow-up Tuesday night, just a motion from the Republicans to reconsider the vote, which passed unanimously. That was followed by a vote to extend the county's contract with Northfield-based SAC, which has been running the financially troubled nursing home since last July 1st. The only county board chairman, C. Pius Weibel, a Champaign Democrat, had anything to say about the contract extension and management of the nursing home. He read from prepared remarks that absolve SAC of most of the nursing home's problems and placed most of the blame on the county government. We hired SAC because we do not think we can manage the nursing home on our own. Like sideline spectators, we only see a margin of the activity that is involved in running a nursing home, Weibel said. So if we see anything associated with the nursing home that we do not like, we tend to blame the nursing home management. Weibel said the county board deserved blame for approving a rule that prevented the payment of outstanding bills to vendors. When the household goods vendor last weekend did not deliver because of an outstanding bill to the nursing home, the rule prevented payment immediately, although there was money available to do that, he said. The county board should take some of the blame for that problem. He also said the nursing home staff should have known that supplies were running low and that the vendor may have to be paid first and perhaps could have sounded the alert earlier. Weibel said that when SAC came in, we saddled them with a huge number of unpaid vendors and a huge number of unpaid bills for residents, past and present. Many were entered prior to the arrival of SAC. They are unfamiliar with many of them. Of course, there will be problems. He said communication between the county government, SAC, and the nursing home must improve, and I think that we are working on that. Meanwhile, SAC President Suzanne Koenig, who did not attend Tuesday's meeting, released a statement in which she pledged to continue managing the nursing home. She claimed her company has produced significant advances for the residents of the Champaign County Nursing Home, along with noteworthy improvement of the publicly owned facility's financial position. Among the improvements, she said, were the replacement of temporary outside nurses with dedicated full-time hires, fewer bed sores, better food service, and improved ratings from the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. The work is by no means done, but the improvements over a short time have been dramatic, Koenig said. We look forward to continuing our service to Champaign County and dozens of its citizens who deserve exceptional care. The county board, meanwhile, is moving toward a vote next month on the possible sale of the nursing home for $11 million to two Evanston-based companies. If the sale is approved by 15 of the 22 board members, the transfer would occur on July 31st, the same day the management agreement with SAC is scheduled to expire. Among those absent from Tuesday's meeting was Champaign Democrat Josh Hartick, who last week announced that he was resigning from the board effective April 30th. Others absent were Democrats Shana Jo Cruz and Robert King, and Republican John Clifford. And now from the University of Illinois, Jones State of UI Event in Works, by Julie Worth. Amid talk of expanding the University of Illinois footprint in Chicago, Chancellor Robert Jones was asked at a campus leadership forum what the UI was doing to accelerate the economic and cultural development of Champaign-Urbana. We're not doing enough, Jones responded, but we plan to do more in a very strategic and high-impact way. On May 22nd, the Chancellor will host an event at the iHotel and Conference Center to update community leaders on the university's short and long-term plans. He also is reconstituting a Chancellor's Advisory Board group of corporate and civic leaders so they can weigh in on the campus strategic plan and other issues affecting the UI's future. It impacts them first and foremost, Jones said at Tuesday forum. We want to make sure that they're not just being informed of what we're doing, but that we have an opportunity to partner with us. He said he meets regularly with the mayors of Champaign and Urbana, school officials, and the leaders of civic and economic development organizations. It's all about developing relationships and making sure those folks understand that we can talk about a presence in Chicago We're not talking about diluting the impact of our presence here, Jones said. The Urbana campus is the key player in a public-private initiative planned in Chicago, the Discovery Partners Institute, which would anchor a statewide innovation network connecting campuses and tech centers across Illinois. Administrators on Tuesday also emphasized the importance of selling the UI's value to legislatures and citizens across the state. Jones recently hired a former state legislator, Robert Flider, as Director of Community and Government Relations for the campus to help with these efforts. Jones and Provost Andreas Cajalaris recited the importance of connecting to the state's population and commercial center in Chicago. The city is taking a push to be a global center of innovation and address the state's pressing needs, including food, health, water, energy, transportation, and logistics, Cajalaris said. The UI is crucial to that effort, he said, but it will require added resources from the state. We're the umbilical cord that connects the entire state of Illinois to the future, he said. The demand that Chicago has for the talent that this university educates is unbelievable. He said the UI shouldn't have to raise its own funds to ensure that every qualified Illinois student has access to the university. The campus has one of the highest percentage of in-state students in the Big Ten, he said. And the only way for us to do better is by making sure that we have the financial means to provide the scholarships necessary to compete with every other state that is recruiting from Illinois. Another questioner asked that what deans and department heads are doing to ensure that victims of sexual harassment feel comfortable coming forward with complaints. A News Gazette analysis found that sexual harassment complaints against UI employees jumped substantially over the last few years, in part because of public publicity about the hashmark MeToo campaign. Cajalaris noted the campus has mandatory sexual harassment training for employees, and the hashmark MeToo movement provides an opportunity to be more attentive to those issues so they can be addressed quickly. Susan Martins, Vice Chancellor for Research, said she worked hard as a department head to establish a network of openness so people feel they can come to us. When an issue arose at a research lab, we all worked together to train and talk to freshman students coming in, women and men, about expectations, she said. Danita Brown-Young, Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs, said her office works closely with the Women's Resources Center on Prevention and Education to ensure students are aware of resources available. We also have to be open and willing and understand that we do have some problems, but it's going to take us collectively to make sure we are addressing them and students are comfortable connecting with deans and department heads and others on campus, she said. And now, stories from the local section of the Wednesday, April 25th, 2018 edition of the News Gazette. Our first area is Teacher of the Week, headlined, Not What You Expect. Meet Lori Brody, who is in her first full year teaching second grade at Tuscola's North Ward Elementary School, after a 10-year run at Campaign's Next Generation. Brody started at the Douglas County School in 2016, but didn't make it a month after receiving news she never would have imagined getting in her mid-30s. Here's more. Last year, your first full year of teaching was rough. What exactly happened? I spent my whole summer at the school getting my classroom ready. 3 weeks in, I was feeling awful. I told my principal I had a kidney infection and had to leave immediately. I went to the doctor and they ran tests and started to hurry, and I knew something wasn't right. The guy came back and said, I'm sorry, we think you have really bad cancer. I had ovarian cancer at 35 years old, which was not what you would expect to happen to you. How did staff and students respond when they found out? The school was really willing to work with me. It was shocking because I hadn't been there long at all. The staff donated sick leave days to me. All these angels that I work with donated so many days that I ended up being paid for almost my entire year. I was double insured as a result, which made medical bills so much more manageable. If I had to go through something so awful, I couldn't ask for a better place. How has your first full year of teaching gone? The best part of getting back was getting to put into plan all those dreams I had. The school I came from was very hands-on, so I brought in a lot of STEAM, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math projects, because I want kids to hit all those subjects at once. We do a really cool project-based learning where kids don't even realize that they're learning. Then the parents find out and call to say they want to come be in second grade again. What's something cool you're working on now? We're in the process of making volcanoes now. They researched them, then had to write out their step-by-step plan and help me draft an email to their parents requesting supplies. You can take a group of kids who have no experience with technology or writing and give them the tools, teach them a few times, and then they're off. What are you looking forward to this summer? Now it's just been a matter of trying to put my life back together again after cancer. I am looking forward to spending time with my kids. We have a camping trip planned, and we'll be by the baseball field all summer. Urbana Police Awards. Headlined, Patrol Officer Honored for Role in Confession, by Mary Schenck, Urbana. An Urbana police officer for 10 years, Darren McCartney said he was a pretty good idea when he's being had. November 1 was one of those days. His skepticism about a man's answers ultimately led to the man's confession to murder and a commendation for McCarthy and three of his colleagues who brought to their bear their 60 years of police experience to effect his arrest. Out of the 10 years I've been here, it was definitely one of the most bizarre things I've encountered, McCartney said, after being publicly lauded by Urbana Police Chief Sylvia Morgan on Tuesday afternoon. A patrol officer, McCartney was sent to what was then known as Presence Convent Medical Center in Urbana on that Wednesday to help find a man from Pennsylvania whose authorities in that state thought he was here. Pennsylvania police believed he had information on his missing girlfriend's whereabouts. McCartney interacted with the man, who was being treated for mental issues, for less than an hour before reckoning that his inconsistent answers, along with injuries on his hands, knuckles, and face, just didn't seem right. McCarthy said had the presence of mind to call detectives. Enter Doug Pipkins and Rich Coleman, who came to the hospital to talk to the man. They had been questioning him about 90 minutes. McCartney was also there, but mostly listening, when he admitted killing his girlfriend, and for another 30 minutes, the gruesome details came out. Meanwhile, back at the police station, Sergeant Matt Bain, also a detective, was juggling phone calls with Pennsylvania police agencies, the Champaign County State's Attorney Office, and the hospital's administrative staff, while continuing his other duties. His supervisor was away at a school. It was a group effort. Everybody played a part, said Coleman, who was in the first day in investigations. What a good day. Morgan called the officers' contributions vital to the investigation and said for their efforts, he'd likely be awarded a trip to Pennsylvania to testify against the man. Other commendations Tuesday went to Officer Betsy Alfonso, named the 2017 John E. Lockard Officer of the Year for her 8 years of service to the department, 6 years in patrol and 2 years in investigation. In addition to general crime investigation, she works as a juvenile officer investigating child sex crimes, is a mentor and volunteers with Illinois Special Olympics. Melissa Haynes, 2017 Civilian Employee of the Year, who was heralded for her crime data analysis used to assist patrol, investigators, and other local agencies. Officer Jared Hurley for putting together intelligence on December and January residential burglaries. Officer John Fenkumont for a February 24th stop that resulted in the arrest of one adult and five juveniles with guns, drugs, and black face masks in their car. Sergeant Tim McNaught, an expert in computerized-based child pornography investigation, for his work in a 2015 case that resulted in an Urbana man being sentenced last week to 11 years in prison. Officer Chad Burnett for his assistance in January to a man who was hospitalized for a head injury and later moved to the Champaign County Nursing Home. Investigator Dwayne Smith for his help in November to a family whose infant died. The department also handed out certificates to four citizens, three who assisted others in time of crisis and one who reported a battery in progress. Court sentencing. Rantoul man gets 30 years for sexual assault of a child by Mary Schenck, Urbana. A Rantoul man who admitted he had sex repeatedly with a child was sentenced Thursday to 30 years in jail. Under truth in sentencing laws, Isaiah Allen, 55, will spend at least 25 and a half years behind bars before he is eligible for parole. Allen pleaded guilty before Judge Roger Weber to predatory sexual criminal assault of a child under the age of 13 for activity that happened in Rantoul between July 26, 2016 and January of this year. The crime, a Class X felony, came to the attention of authorities in January when the child went to the emergency room. A forensic examination of her revealed an ongoing pattern of sexual abuse by Allen. Assistant State's Attorney Lindsay Clark said Rantoul police then confronted Allen, who admitted he had had sex with the child at least 20 times. The child and her mother made statements to Weber about the devastating effect Allen's actions had on both of them. Allen apologized to them in court. Allen will have to register as a sex offender upon release. He was given credit for 89 days already served in county jail. Clark said Allen had no prior convictions. This is Reader Garth. Thank you for joining us for the reading from today's News Gazette. We'll be back in a moment to continue our reading.